Now, discussions about animal rights and animal welfare can be divisive, but our next guest says we can take a balanced approach to our relationships with animals in all communities of our lives, whether we're talking about pets in our homes, meat on our plates, or animals in the wild. He says we need to think about our cultural, ethical, and legal connections with animals with the concept of respect front and center. David Favor is a professor of law at the Michigan State University College of Law. He's written several books about animals and law and is a founding officer of the Animal Legal Defense Fund. His newest book is Respecting Animals, A Balanced Approach to Our Relationship with Pets, Food, and Wildlife. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, what does it mean, big picture, before we dig into some specific examples, to have more respect for the animals in our lives?
It is a matter of being aware of them as individuals, and respecting them means that you take into account who they are and what their needs are.
And you approach this in the book from an ethical standpoint and a legal standpoint, and let's talk about the ethics side of things. You talk about animals as being entities that we need to think about in ethical terms.
That's correct. My approach is kind of basic, and that is they are living beings on this planet, just like we are living beings. And I think that it does us good as ethical beings to take into account the existence, and when we have impacts on others, that the word others should include animals and not just people.
And I think, and you write that a lot of times people go to a zero or everything mindset. Either there's no such thing as a right or an ethical expectation for an animal, or if you start thinking of animals in those terms, you are quickly in a place where animals have the same ethical responsibility or ethical protections or rights as a human. You say there's someplace in between.
That's correct. Yes, I think we have to acknowledge that humans are really in charge of this earth and that we can't treat them as equals. Obviously, very few animals have anywhere near our capacities or interest. They don't really care about democracies or freedom of speech or anything like that, or the right to vote. What they want is simply a reasonably good life under our care.
And you spend time defining the idea of a community of humans and animals and different ways of thinking of the ways we exist in communities with animals. Can you spell that out for us?
Yes. One of the other problems in thinking about animals is that a number of people think that a particular animal should have the same expectations regardless of where physically it's found. And I think that this is not helpful. It means well, but it's not helpful because just like we treat humans ethically depending upon what community we share with them, I think the animals should be in the same position, that their ethics, our ethics towards the animals, will be derived from the community that we coexist in.
Let's look at some concrete examples, and let's start with probably the animal people interact with the most in their daily lives, their pets. When we think about our pets in terms of respect, how does that affect the care we give them?
Well, I think in today's world, in the United States in particular, that community is the family community, and that as a member, when you let them in, when you adopt them, which is a term we use, of course, for children first, but now we're using it for animals too, that shows in and of itself, the word adoption means bringing you into the responsibility of the family. And if you take that seriously, then you must understand that your dog, cat, or other animal has its own personality, its own needs, species needs, and individual needs, and you're not carrying out your obligations if you don't let that animal be itself.
We're talking to law professor David Favor, author of the new book, Respecting Animals, A Balanced Approach to Our Relationship with Pets, Food, and Wildlife. And let's get into the food portion of things, David. Some people, obviously some vegetarians and vegans say, well, if we're treating animals with respect, we, by definition, can't eat them. Is it possible to have animals raised for food and yet have this condition of respect for them?
I think it is, although not in our present food system. The industrial food system we now have is totally disrespectful of the animals in the system, so please don't think I'm supporting that at all. But I have seen enough family farms where the animals and the humans share the farm, and they know the individual animals, and the animals are respected. They're given their needs, and they have a reasonably good life. And then to support that farm and that life, they do become food for humans.
Yeah, you distinguish in your book between traditional agricultural animal raising and industrial animal raising. Why? And you say that that personal contact between the human and the animal is one of the distinguishing characteristics.
Yes, I think that's very important. This comes primarily because I started raising commercial animals myself in the form of sheep and chickens. And it is, if you're the owner of the animal and you walk around and you see that animal and you look it in the eye and it looks you in the eye, I think that inherently creates a level of responsibility, a recognition that this is a being and that I am responsible for that being. And in these industrial facilities where the chickens, there's, 10,000 chickens in one building, no human ever looks in the eye of this animal, certainly not the owner. And so it just results in terrible conditions for the animals because nobody cares.
Now, we heard from Ellen on the Ideas Network Facebook page. He says, I enjoy getting proteins from several sources, but I really enjoy animal meats and products made for them. They have room to grow, are not mistreated, are attended to in a respectful manner, and are well-fed and have available water and have shelter from the sun and harsh elements. But another Facebook user, Andrew, says the actual killing of the animal could be seen as mistreatment in and of itself, regardless of the conditions that led up to that point. What do you think, David?
I think that is indeed the most difficult of the questions, and that is it respectful? Is that moment of death respectful? And in one way it isn't, and another way it is. I understand the people who make the claim that there shouldn't be any death. I would just suggest you, if you don't have that death, then the animal isn't going to be able to exist on the farm from a commercial reality point of view. It simply is a necessity, and I'd rather look at and believe that it is that one day of death is counterbalanced with all the days, months, and so forth of a good life.
We're talking to David Favor, professor of law at the Michigan State University College of Law. He's talking to us about his new book, Respecting Animals, A Balanced Approach to Our Relationship with Pets, Food, and Wildlife. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What does ethical use of treatment and treatment of animals mean to you? Do you think that you treat animals with respect in your life? Do you think we as humans do that in general? What kind of legal protections should there be for animals? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up the conversation with David Favor, professor of law at Michigan State University, looking at his new book, Respecting Animals, A Balanced Approach to Our Relationship with Pets, Food, and Wildlife. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of ethical responsibility do you think we have for pets, for animals raised for food or work animals, for animals in a circus or a zoo, for animals in the wild? And what kind of legal protections do you want to see for those different animals in different places? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. David, let's turn to that legal side of things. In practice, there are protections for animals that do stop short of recognizing them as fully legal entities like, a human.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This idea of respect is pretty fully fleshed out in our criminal code. When you talk about the anti-cruelty laws, the duty of care sections of those in all 50 states put a pretty high bar of veterinary care and food and water, exercise, and not being subjected to the elements and to other negative events. The problem with that criminal law is that it exempts food animals and animals in scientific research. So some communities of animals aren't covered by those criminal laws, but the companion animal clearly is, and it does a fairly good job of setting out what respectful use means.
Do you think we should be reconsidering our laws when it comes to food animals and research animals?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, we need a major rethink on the food animals in particular. Scientific use of animals is a little bit more complex because there really are some positive things happening there, and so it's hard to balance, but that's a conversation worth having too.
Let's go to our callers now. Jim is with us in Milwaukee. Jim, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Jim?
Well, I used to live up in...
Okay. Emergency vehicles passing up the gym. Okay, it sounds a little better now.
They're blown by me, yep. Anyway, I used to live in northern Wisconsin, and we had all kinds of animals, steers and raccoons and squirrels and dogs, chickens and whatever, And we named them all, and they were all fed and watered and cared for. And with that, the chickens usually ended up in the freezer, and the steers ended up in the freezer. But they were named, and they were petted and loved and cared for right up until the time that we processed them for our needs.
Jim, thanks for the call. Jump in before another emergency vehicle goes by there. David, what do you think of that? All the animals were named, Jim says, cared for, and it sounds like he feels pretty good about his connection with those animals.
Well, that is generally what I'm trying to aim us towards. Yes, absolutely. And giving an animal a name is a definite human aspect of showing respect and acknowledgement of individuality among the animals. So I think that's a nice thing.
How do we make sure, David, that, or is this possible, that we're not treating them in human terms that are in ways that are at odds with how they'd want to be treated, if we could say that, as animals? Are we putting human terms on things that don't want them?
We do have to be careful about that. I've seen people do some very strange things for animals that I'm pretty sure the animal did not necessarily think was a good idea. I think that comes with what science can tell us nowadays, and science really can tell us quite a bit about the nature of animals, both as a species and then the repertoire that's available within that particular group of animals. So dogs, I think now we know quite a bit about, and if somebody cares to figure it out, they'll find out what it is they need for their own particular dog.
Jim, thanks for that call. Go next to Jonathan in Sharon. Jonathan, hi.
How's it going?
Good. What do you think?
I guess what I think is that in this country we have a huge disconnection with our food system, and I think that or where our food comes from, and that skews our understanding of the animal's role in a diverse ecosystem, and they play such a vital role in maintaining healthy soil, like, you know, ruminants, chickens and animals like that, and there's many cases throughout history of cultures having a very respectful relationships with animals that are helping them, and I think that we've kind of lost this sense of having that mutual relationship where we're building fertility in the land but then also surviving off of it.
David, what do you think?
I absolutely agree. And that's one of the points in my book, is that when we talk about farm animals, not only is it interesting to the human to have that relationship, but to the environment as well. It's pasture land that allows the wildlife to coexist alongside of us in the natural areas, particularly here in the Midwest, whereas acres and acres and thousands of acres of cornfield do nothing for wildlife, nothing whatsoever. And so the quality of life, both for the environment and for ourselves and for the animals, are better matched in the community farming that has historical roots.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. We're talking to David Favor. His new book is called Respecting Animals. Back to your calls. James is with us in Milwaukee. James, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering what David's opinion is. We've been talking about keeping animals in cages and the ethics of that. And I was wondering what he thinks about keeping children locked up at the border. How does that relate to how we think of other human beings as animals when Trump demonizes them?
So can we make analogies, David, between locking up humans and locking up animals?
Absolutely. That is disrespectful of the children in a much higher degree, I think, than it is even with animals, because humans are so much more complex, and that cage is much more interfering with what is good for the particular human involved. So, yeah, absolutely. You got to watch it, whether it's a lion or a child or an iguana. Cages can be extremely disrespectful.
We'll go next to Kirk on the line in Wisconsin Dells. Kirk, hello.
Hi. Just a brief aside to the previous comment. If I remember my history correctly, the origins of the SPCA here in America were the first docents of children's advocacy in the workplace. Now, to my comment, I recently came from California, now living here in central Wisconsin. I'm aware that the dairy industry is roughly a $20 billion, with a B, Carl Sagan units industry per year in the state of Wisconsin. question. How long before we start to talk about and realize the necessity of separating mass wealth extraction from basic animal rights? I'll take my answer off the air.
Kirk, thanks for the call. David, what do you think? Animal welfare, animal rights versus a business model?
That is a problem. That is one of the major problems in the United States and the world, as far as that goes, and that is the disconnect between treating animals as individuals and them as simply a commodity for further profit. Our corporate world seems to be driven by need for efficiency, and efficiency usually means cutting back and treating things as uniform as possible. And that's not what we need for animals. We need some recognition of them as individuals, and it's inefficient. And it will produce it may produce a higher cost for commercial animals if we go that route. But I think that's simply something we have to pay.
Kirk, thanks for that call. David, I know you're trying to raise a lot of questions, get us talking about animals. Are we all going to end up with the same answers?
Well, no, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen, knowing human beings and how diverse this is. But one of the issues is, you know, when somebody talks about things, you bring your cultural history, your family history, your religious views. There's so much of human's nature that comes into play when we start talking about animals. So it would be quite a while before we all got to the same point. But an example where we have socially got to the same point is dogfighting. Dogfighting used to be available just about everywhere, and it still is available every now and then. But we, as a society, we have decided, we have a mutual consent that dogfighting is unethical and therefore illegal to do in the United States. I think other issues are also susceptible to that decision-making process, but it takes time.
Do you think that the bar is going to be raised to have wider definitions, more protections for animals?
Oh, absolutely. The arc is clearly towards more awareness and protection for animals.
We'll leave it there. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We've been talking to David Favor. He's a professor of law at the Michigan State University College of Law. He joined us today to talk about his new book. It's called Respecting Animals, A Balanced Approach to Our Relationship with Pets, Food, and Wildlife. There's still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe your experiences, your stories. You can join the conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page. What do you think about ethics and our responsibility to animals, pets, food in the wild, and beyond?